Hello and welcome to Radio EduTalk. This is David Noble in Dalgetty Bay, and I'm delighted to have on the show this evening Dominic Coughlin of King's College in London. And over the next 25 minutes or so, we're going to be hearing about Dominic's research into the development of the teacher standards in England and the professional standards for teachers in Scotland. If you're listening to the live show and you've got a comment or a question for Dominic, you can get in touch in two ways. You can email edutalker, that's edutalkr, at hotmail.co.uk, or you can pop something up on Twitter and include the hashtag edutalk. So welcome to EduTalk, Dominic.
Oh, thank you.
And just to start off with, could you give us a kind of brief background to your career in academia?
Yes, I've been teaching in England. I'm a teacher now. I'm a science teacher in the secondary academy on the Isle of Wight, and I've been teaching for about 15 years. A lot of my career so far has been involved in teacher education, and particularly school-based teacher education. So where I live at the moment, we don't have a direct university on the Isle of Wight, so lots of the teacher training has been school-based. Quite a lot of that has involved engagement in teaching standards, so the various teaching standards that we've had in England over the years I've engaged with. My research kind of grew out of that, and I have been quite a strong supporter of the National Union of Teachers. So I've had quite a strong involvement in teacher professionalism, teaching standards and teaching development, and that's kind of the background I come from. So I've been involved in the ID at King's College London and started looking from an academic point of view at teaching standards, and that's really where the research grew from.
And what's your kind of particular interest? So this was a particular stage in your career where you were pushing on to do an ED then, and obviously with some kind of background within the union. But I'm interested, did you go out from the very start to do a kind of comparison between the situations in England or Scotland, or did that develop later?
No, I didn't. Originally I was just interested in teacher professionalism, and the research is quite well ploughed in this area. There's lots of research out there about teacher professionalism and how it stacks up against other sort of well-known professions, maybe medicine and law, and comparisons of teaching and structures to try and develop teacher professionalism. So, for example, I'd also been a council member of the General Teaching Council in England before its demise. And then I've been along to sessions recently about the new Chartered Teacher College in England. So you know, my interest from an academic point of view is very much around teacher professionalism, how it can be enhanced, and the kind of structures around that. But as I got into the ID and started to do more work around assignments, I really focused in on teaching standards, and particularly the teacher standards in England. And the catalyst really for a comparative study was, as I was doing the ID, there was two reviews had taken place. So in England, it was the review for the teacher standards, and then shortly after that, at the start of 2012, there was a review of the professional standards for teachers in Scotland.
Yeah, and I'll probably say at this point, Dominic, that I was part of one of the GTCS writing groups when they were rewriting the professional standards in Scotland, and I was interviewed by yourself a number of years ago now for this particular study. Can you say at this point a little bit about your kind of methods of data collection and your methodology?
Yes, the methodology was split into two areas. Firstly, there's quite a lot of documents out there about, obviously there's teacher standards themselves, but there's a number of documents kind of relating to the processes of developing the teaching standards, and also the kind of background documents. So, for example, there's a white paper in 2010 in England, which almost was the starting gun for the review of teaching standards in England. And then in Scotland, obviously, you had the Donaldson Review, and Teaching Scotland's Future was a major document around teacher education, which had a big influence on the development of the professional standards in Scotland. So the first part was really a review of documents, an analysis of documents, and then flowing from that was some elite interviews, so interviews with those people, key players, as I went on to call them, involved in the development of the teaching standards in the two countries. So, for example, in England, I contacted people who were on the review group and conducted 5 interviews, and I managed to get an interview with a government advisor. And in Scotland, it was 6 interviews spread across the steering group, and there's 3 writing groups for the 3 different levels of the standards. So that was kind of the methodology around it. And then laid on top of that, I took a theoretical approach that was based on Bernstein's pedagogic device, and within that used critical discourse analysis to analyse both the documents and the transcripts from the interview. So it was kind of multi-layered, so we've got the pedagogic device on top, and then sort of interwoven within that the critical discourse analysis of the kind of fine-grained analysis that I wanted to pull out of the research.
And in terms of the findings, I was reading over it again last night, Dominic, it certainly takes me back, you know, to 5 years. 5 years ago, it was a really interesting time, and you talk about Teaching Scotland's Future, and that was around the time that actually the Chartered Teacher Scheme in Scotland was nearing an end, which is interesting, mirrors the recent developments in England. But you through your kind of discourse analysis, you know that there is a kind of dominance of Donaldson in terms of the kind of background to the standards development in Scotland.
Yes, I mean, that was a really, the starting point was really trying to look at the background discourse in both countries and try and see, I mean, Bernstein asks of the pedagogic device, he says, are there any general principles underlying the transformation of knowledge into pedagogic communication? And that was really the approach I wanted to take. I wanted to identify, were there any rules, any principles that were guiding these two parallel processes through to the final product, the final text, the teaching standards. And in order to be able to do that, I adopted kind of a four-stage approach. So I wanted, first of all, to look at the background. What was the background discourse? What the background influences? Obviously, those key two documents, which was the 2010 White Paper in England and Teaching Scotland's Future in Scotland. And then from that, trying to take it forward and look at, well, how were the groups composed? What was the processes involved in selecting the groups? What were the general rules that the groups were under? Were there any particular processes that were involved, and then finally, what's the kind of outcome? What was the kind of discourse emanating from the final standards? So, in terms of looking at the background, it was probably the point at which there was most similarity with the two processes. Both governments, the Scottish government and the UK government in England, were key players with the OECD. They took part in the PISA rankings. I know in Scotland there have been a couple of reports commissioned by the Scottish government for the OECD to come in. So there was quite a lot there in the background, certainly in the literature, about this idea of pressures of globalisation in the two countries. And Gove, was Michael Gove, was the Secretary of State at the time in England, the UK government, and many of his speeches were about the loss of jobs here, going to foreign shores, and we needed to redouble our efforts, as one of his key phrases. And he often talked in economic terms, so the kind of background discourse was very much an economic one. He refers to intellectual capital. And the way I tried to frame this was really by referring to it as a kind of economy of performance, we need performance in schools that is very much based on economic outcomes. And there was a kind of a similarity between that and what happened in Scotland. I mean, Donaldson produced the report Teaching Scotland's Future, but then he did refer quite heavily to the OECD, to globalisation, the pressures of globalisation, and he referred to globalisation challenging previous certainties. And he said it's something that really couldn't be ignored. So that was quite a key similarity between the two processes. However, there was quite a different interpretation of how the two education systems should respond to this in terms of their teaching standards. In England, it was very much around becoming the effective teacher. And there was quite a large literature review done to support Donaldson in his report writing, referred to different paradigms of teaching. So in England, the effective teacher, we need to cut down the bureaucracy, the TDA, which was the Training and Development Agency for Schools, in their 2007 standard, had hierarchical standards for teachers going through the different career stages. But that was felt to be overly bureaucratic and, as we refer to it, fully full of fluffy concepts. So the narrative is very much about trying to reduce that to a single set of standards for all teachers, whereas Donaldson really wanted to develop a coherent set of standards, so standards for different career stages, but also on top of that bringing a standard that would be for teachers, more experienced teachers, to develop more experienced teachers. So that was the idea of his continuous improvement. And that idea was very much run with within the review processes. And the GTCS coined the phrase the critically engaged adaptive expert. And then in the setting up of the review, again, was quite different. Within the review in England, we had quite a select group of people coming together, and this is really where Bernstein's work came in became quite useful, because he referred to particular fields where the interplay between these different bodies takes, institutions takes place, and he referred to the recontextualized field, which is where the knowledge that's developed in universities is taken and relocated to other areas where, for example, universities where, and also schools where it could be used in a kind of pedagogized form. So in England, you've got quite an adversarial situation. You've got the review group that is made up of lots of head teachers, but also head teachers that are particularly known to be supportive of the government's agenda at the time. You've got no teaching unions. You've got the head teachers very much from academies. There's two teachers on the group, again from academies, and then people like Professor Hare, Anthony Hare, who is a Conservative government advisor. So you've got what's referred to the official recontextualized field, and then outside that, not on the review group, you've got the universities, you've got the unions, you've got local authority representatives, and USET, the Universities and College Education for Teachers Association. So they're the professional recontextualized field. So it's quite clearly demarcated. In Scotland, it's quite different. You've got, obviously, University Department for Education is very much part of the official recontextualised fields. You've got teachers and you've got head teachers, and you've got local authority involvement as well. So there's not that kind of same demarcation within the steering group and the writing groups in Scotland, with maybe more distant voices pushed to the margins. And it's not quite, it's a bit more grey in terms of where the different institutions, different voices are located. So that's the sort of setting up of the field. the individuals and the institutions that are involved. And then we move on to the third component, which is really what's referred to as the institutional context of pedagogy. So what are the rules? How is it taking place? Are there any kind of key principles? And in England, you've got what Bernstein would refer to, you know, a strongly framed and classified process. So it's condensed format. It's taking place over a three-month period. You've got the review group and then a drafting group that goes away and writes up and then comes back to the review group the next week. And you've got this process going on for about 3 months. And there was lots of people on the group thought it was really well chaired, and Dame Sally Coates was the chair, and she was a head teacher at the time in London, and she seemed to have quite a good grasp on the process and being able to generate text and ideas quite quickly. However, there was certain bits that didn't seem to come near the review group. So, for example, there's a second part to the standards which deals with conduct of teachers and fundamental British values, and it appears that that was actually written by Department of Education officials, and actually the review group had limited sort of say on that particular area. And there were certain contentious areas, and one was, should they just have 8 simple statements or should they have bullet points as well? So there's a number of different areas where there was a little bit of contention. But the process seemed to move through quite quickly, and they produced the draft within about 3 or 4 months. Again, that contrasted quite a lot with what happened in Scotland, a process happening in the early part of 2012. And quite different in Scotland, there was quite a lot of overlapping into different areas. And the context different because, whereas in England you've got the Department of Education leading on this, in Scotland it's the General Teaching Council. So, from Donaldson, it's been disseminated through various committees and the National Partnership Group, and you've got that kind of overlapping of officials into different places and into different committees. And there are more extensive work because you've got 3 or 4 different sets of standards. And again, I recognise there's a lot of similarities, though, between the process in Scotland and England, because you've got quite strong classification and framing. That's what Bernstein would recognise. As many of the ideas, many of the concepts are actually predetermined in terms of, for example, the One Planet Schools agenda. Again, that was something that was developed outside the review process, and you've got the key ideas of this idea of the adaptive expert, which is very much came from the Donaldson review. So there's a number of overarching principles that were predetermined, the preset, and it was really down to the steering and writing groups to kind of work within that framework and develop the text to the standards. So in terms of the processes, comparing them, I would say in England that it was quite a closely controlled process by the Department of Education. It took a short period of time. Scotland took a lot longer, but then there was quite a lot of overlapping with different committees and different government involvement, although it took place at the General Teaching Council.
And am I right in saying, Dominic, there was a public consultation with the new Scottish standards, but did that take place in England at all?
Well, it was slightly truncated in England. You had a call for evidence at the start of the process and then a more restricted consultation afterwards. But there was it wasn't a full consultation. I think that was quite a key difference. In Scotland, there was really quite a genuine attempt, and I think it's quite traditional in Scotland to have full public consultation. There was a number of meetings arranged throughout Scotland. They had Glow Meet. They had an online survey that people could fill in and institutions could fill in. In England, that wasn't quite the case. They took the standards out to a number of different teaching schools, or training schools as they were called then, now become teaching schools, and it was a more controlled in terms of a consultation, and it wasn't really called a consultation, it was called an engagement process, so it was all a different kind of status to it. And one of the interview respondents referred to it that they did look at it, so we took it into account, but what really they did was they took the bits that they felt worked with what they had already. So they had quite a clear remit. There's quite a strong in terms of reference that came from the Department for Education, and often it was said that they went back to that terms of reference in terms of what the government wanted them to do and the piece of work that they wanted to develop in terms of the teachers' standards. Again, in Scotland, there was this consultation and quite a piece of work done to try and interpret that. But again, there was this strong idea that came through from Donaldson and his report. And although they took the consultation, there was lots of changes made in terms from the draft documents to the final documents. The kind of those key ideas were still present. So you still had the One Planet Schools agenda, you still had the leadership input, and you still had that strong research element for teaching in Scotland. And it's after the consultation, obviously, that the final process was that the standards in Scotland had to go to the council for the General Teaching Council. And one respondent referred to sealing the deal in terms of the status of the standard for career development. And they didn't think that this was the sort of lobbying around the outside from one of the teaching unions, didn't think that it should have the sort of high stakes nature that maybe the standards for career entry had. So there was some changes made around that. But really, the bigger picture was that those ideas in Donaldson's report and the kind of political lobbying around One Planet Schools did survive all the way through the various different processes and were very present in the final text.
So do you feel that, I mean, a lot of people would talk about the, and I think you mentioned it as well, the collective narrative in Scotland and the consensual approach. So are you saying that was mostly the case, but there was a little bit of kind of trading around the fringes and, you know, there some kind of influence from a policy elite or whoever was in fashion at the time?
Yes, and that was quite clear in the literature, in terms of doing the literature review, it's quite clear that there's almost a tension between this idea of a policy elite in Scotland versus, you know, professional engagement, and this idea that there's almost a collective narrative around certain issues and not really much sort of critique of those areas. And I think there's probably a couple of things to say about that. I think one issue is that I noticed in the research is Scotland's relatively small compared to England. One question I did ask the people I interviewed was, you know, did you know the other people on the review group? Now, in England, that tended not to be the case. But in Scotland, obviously, Scotland's education is probably about the same size as London. So it was a case that people knew each other in different positions, and there was the kind of development of key players within Scotland, and perhaps that is how the collective narrative develops in terms of a few key players in key institutions that might have quite a lot of mobility. So at one point in the research and the report I write up about, well, there seems to be a pattern in terms of career development. So one person could be a teacher, head teacher, local authority, university employee, and then move through the various institutions and the sort of arm's length government bodies. And that seemed to be quite a strong pattern in what I looked at. So perhaps, yes, the collective narrative might emanates from that kind of background. I'm not sure it was necessarily a policy, a lead that's been, this theme that's been developed in literature, but perhaps there is a strong collective narrative around those key institutions and obviously those key players in Scottish education.
We're coming into the last few minutes of the show, Dominic, and of course we'll be wanting to hear your kind of recommendations or implications from your research. And I believe you kind of tie it into kind of looking to the future then. So assuming that in England and Scotland there'll be future revisions to the standards, you have some suggestions for readers?
Yes, I think the process of standards development seemed to be quite an investment. I think originally in Scotland they thought they'd set aside 3 days for this, where it took a lot more time to bring the text and refine the text, and it's quite a long and involved process. And so certainly I think the development of future sets of standards needs to be quite an extended process, or at least allow people to come out of schools if they're obviously in teachers and head teachers for, I would say, a few weeks at a time. But also I think it's quite a skill, and I think one pattern I've noticed is through various different reviews of standards that the same people aren't involved next time they're reviewed, or seemingly not. Certainly in England, the ones that reviewed the 2007 standards, there were no people involved again in 2011. So I would say that there is a case to argue that you need to develop people who are quite well-versed in this process and almost learn the mistakes perhaps that have taken place or been made in the past, and at least have that kind of continuity through the various different revisions. So that, I think that would be quite a strong theme. And somebody I interviewed in Scotland suggested that they should have workshops in terms of training people for this unique unique process that developing standards is, and how can we do it? How can we make it a bit more professional? How can we make the process probably producing something that really does work?
I'm just wondering, with that in mind, Dominic, was there any kind of areas of the education system, any sort of potential policy actors, I think you use that phrase as well, that might be brought in next time? I mean, the unions were, or certain unions were fairly well represented, and the WWF, I believe, as well, in one of the groups. But did any of the respondents suggest that there were particular areas of the system in Scotland that had been missed out?
I think there's always a tension there between, do we get actual practitioners, do we get teachers involved to write the teacher standards, which would seem to be quite logical. I think the counter-argument against that is, well, maybe you haven't got the experience of policy development or developing text or developing policies within school. But certainly I think you need a quite clear blend of people, and not necessarily, I think having quite clear criteria in terms of who you want to select to be on these groups, and nowhere that I've seen that have there been published criteria for selecting people for review groups, so whether it be in England, Scotland or elsewhere. It seems to be something that's overlooked. And I think if there was that kind of process of developing a policy or set of criteria around, well, who actually do we want to select for these particular roles? What type of person we're looking for? And then that can be implemented. And get the range of people perhaps that some review groups haven't had in the past.
Is that something that the GTCS in Scotland could look to England for, or you know, were there gaps in this kind of systematic approach in England as well as in Scotland?
Well, I think the 2011 standards in England, or the 2011 process that produced the 2012 teacher standards, was very much, obviously had the the hand of government there. And I know from one interviewee, the process in England was very much a long list developed by civil servants, and then the Minister for Schools went through and said yes to no, that person or no to that person. So it was very much a politicised selection process. But I think that was for quite clearly, this is, you know, it's not an apolitical, selecting people for teacher standard review group is not an apolitical in probably any country. But I think in terms of if the process of reviewing standards is going to take place maybe every 5 years, then there needs to be some sort of continuity between the different review processes, and maybe that's where criteria could come in for selecting people onto review groups or standardised processes, or in fact having a group of people who are being developed for this particular role maybe 2 years hence. I think that's so important to get this work right, but that kind of cycle could be quite useful in terms of looking ahead and looking for people who might be able to feed into the next review process.
And just finally, Dominic, any other recommendations then based upon your research in terms of regulation, you know, control of the process, or even, you know, what I suppose I can have in terms of what actually goes on between the meetings of the various writing or steering groups?
Well, that was another interesting area in terms of how the kind of crystallisation of the text took place. And certainly in England, it was very much a process that was guided and by the BFE civil servants. So they had quite a big hand in terms of actually the formulation of the text, which is pretty crucial. And obviously in Scotland, had a couple of key players in terms of the GTCS, officers who were leading on each of the writing groups, and through the process of developing text, obviously circulating text by email. And I think within that process, it's, I think at the start of the review, and it's possibly where the review in England was done quite well, you had quite clear demarcation of individuals who were going to take part in the drafting. So you had a subgroup of people. Now, okay, the subgroup might have been skewed in terms of the type of person that was on there, but they did a job in terms of developing the text between the meetings, and then the review group could look at those texts and say yes or no, or give their opinion. I think in the Scottish process, it was very much controlled centrally, and there was a process of emails were sent out, and some text got added, and others were put to the sidelines. And I think in terms of having that as quite clear in terms of how text will be developed, what the process is, maybe even a set of criteria of how you would sort through, how you prioritise why some bits of text will go into the background. So again, the process of text development is quite important, and there needs to be a clear outline in terms of how that process will proceed and how it will lead to the final product.
And just before we head off, Dominic, you know, it sounds as if this is something that you're very interested in, to say the least, and professional development in the widest sense, I suppose. And is this something that is going to continue to be a feature of your work and your research in years to come?
Yes, I think so. I mean, the part of the literature review was looking at, and something we've not really touched on this evening, but was looking at, well, what use are teaching standards? Or do they have a use? Do they have a role to play in teaching? And it was clear that in England they wanted to frame the teacher as somebody who, you know, didn't have a career in terms of developing. There wasn't a hierarchy of standards, maybe coming into teaching for 5 to 6 years. As one interview respondent said, like working in the city for 5 or 6 years and then going off into another occupation. Well, obviously in Scotland that's not the case. You've got this system of development and career-long adaptive or critically engaged adaptive expert, which was for the career in teaching. So I think where I'd probably like to take my research is really looking at it and trying to make sense of it, trying to make sense of teaching in terms of the context of professional development, whether or not teaching is a career, whether or not it's something people come in to for 5 or 6 years. So I think really trying to understand what it is to be a teacher really is probably where I'd like to take future research.
Well, best wishes for that, Dominic. And we've got obviously the usual channels through email and Twitter, but our own Twitter hashtag. But I understand that you're on Twitter yourself. Is that a way that people can get in touch, Dominic? Or
yeah,
what's
that's
best?
Fine.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
What we'll do when we pop the podcast up on edutalk.cc is we'll include a link to like a kind of shortened version of your research findings, hopefully that will generate a little bit of discussion and debate among edutalk listeners. So thanks again, Dominic, and we'd love to have you in the show again in the future.